What's happening on the big screen and the small? What to watch?
Time for our weekly look at what's in the cinema and on TV and what you should be watching. Alexandra Heller-Nicholas is with us once again. Hi, Alexandra.
Hi, Suzanne.
I know you're taking us to the cinema. Let's start with Nomadland. Tell us about this.
Nomadland, we're going to be hearing a lot about as we move closer to the Oscars. And of course, the Oscars are going to be a little bit strange this year. We haven't had our big blockbuster releases. But Nomadland, I am not alone in saying this is a real contender. This is directed by a woman called Chloe Zhao. She was born in China. She's an American filmmaker. She made a beautiful film in 2017 called The Rider. And she's won awards internationally. She is quite well known for working with untrained actors, so amateurs, people that have never acted before. And she gets these extraordinary, very sensitive performances. But in Nomadland, she finds herself working with the Oscar-winning Frances McDormand and also with a cast of untrained actors. It's a really interesting balance. This is a very, very low-key drama. McDormand plays a woman called Fern, who's in her 60s, who has lost her husband, and her hometown has effectively collapsed after the 2008 global financial crisis. So she has this double trauma, and she decides to take to the road, the nomad of the title, and she lives in her RV, and she joins a community of nomads, of grey nomads, who, like her, just travel around from job to job, whether it's working in a diner or working at an Amazon dispatch warehouse, and they cross paths. All of these people just travel around the country looking for work, and there's nothing patronizing or corny about this film. It's a portrait of a particular way of life that I think is so different to the way that so many of us live. It's extremely sensitive, very, very compelling. And I think it's just a no-brainer for Oscar's contention, whether it's for Best Actress for McDormand or for Chloe Zhao. It'd be nice if some more women could win Best Director.
There's a mix, isn't there, of actors and real-life nomads who are appearing in the film as well.
And I bet if you didn't know who they were, you wouldn't be able to tell. That's one of the, it's really is Chloe Zhao's superpower in that she can pull these extraordinary performances out of people that have no acting ability. And I say superpower quite deliberately because she's actually pegged to direct the forthcoming Marvel film, The Eternals, or Eternals, in late 2021, which will be very, very different from the kinds of movies that she's made previously. I don't think there'll be a lot of untrained actors in a Marvel film, but who knows?
Now, here's a clip from the trailer for Nomadland. It includes Frances McDormand as Fern, as well as the voices of some of those real-life nomads who are featured in the film.
My husband worked at the USG mine in Empire. I was a substitute teacher.
It is a tough time right now. You may want to consider early retirement.
I need work. I like work.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Welcome to Badlands Spa.
What the nomads are doing is not that different than what the pioneers did.
Hey, Fern.
I think Fern's part of an American tradition.
Oh, he's going to come right through the glass.
My dad used to say, what's remembered lives. I maybe spent too much of my life just remembering.
Alexandra, how many stars for Nomadland?
Nomadland is easily 5 out of 5 for me.
5. All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You want it to be that if it's going to be an Oscar contender, don't you? All right. So from Nomadland, we're off to Dreamland. What's Dreamland all about?
A very different kind of land. I call it Margot Robbie land. That's where I'd like to be. I'm not the strongest patriot that I know, but when it comes to Margot Robbie, I'm right up there. I tell you what, I think I will watch anything with Margot Robbie in it. I think that an actor of her caliber can turn a film that you might otherwise not be that interested in and just do something quite magical with it. Now, she first hit my radar with I, Tonya, and she lost the Best Actress Oscar to that too, Frances McDormand from Nomadland, interestingly enough, who won it for 3 billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri. So we're dealing, you know, with both of our Nomadland and our Dreamland, we're dealing with actresses of an extraordinarily high caliber. Now, on the surface, Dreamland, it's really just a kind of downbeat gangster film set in the Depression. There's a bit of a Bonnie and Clyde vibe going on. Margot Robbie plays a character called Alison Wells. She's on the run. She's accused of violent crimes, including killing a child. And she basically arrives in a little nowhere small town to hide out. And the locals are after her. There's money on her head. But she captivates our protagonist, a guy called Eugene Evans, played by Finn Cole, who commits himself without logic to defending her and to protecting her. And he falls in love with her. The big question that he must face, however, is his faith in her innocence grounded in reality? And this, I think, is the question that we ask throughout the film. The film is told from the perspective of his now grown up little sister, Phoebe, and she talks a lot about Eugene's father, who abandoned him when he was a child. And both of these men are captivated or are obsessed by dreams, which is how we get the title of the film, that they live in this sort of fantasy world where reality has a very unusual relationship to the real world that they live in. Without Margot Robbie, I think that this would be a good film, but perhaps not a great film. But with her in this particular role, I think, like all of her films, it really feels a lot more special than it might if it was played with another lead performer.
Now, I see that Travis Fimmel is in it. For fans of Vikings, he was Ragnar Lothbrok in Vikings. Have you watched Vikings?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't believe I missed a Viking reference. There are no Vikings in this.
No Vikings in this. But look, I mean, it's one of those shows where the first couple of series are awesome. Like, if you're into your history and you like a bit of, well, rugged Vikings, it's great. But then it kind of goes off and becomes a bit strange. But I know there are a lot of diehard Viking fans out there. Anyway, Travis Fimmel, Ragnar Lothbrok, he makes an appearance as well. Anyway, in this scene, Eugene Evans, played by Finn Cole, discovers Margot Robbie's fugitive bank robber hidden in a barn.
I'm Allison.
I know who you are.
And it's only fair that I know who you are.
Eugene.
Eugene. It's a smart name.
Ain't that you? Huh? They said you was a killer.
I'm not a killer. Eugene, I'm gonna be real frank with you. I'm trying to maintain composure, but this hole in my leg is hurting like a mother right now. So if you help me, I'll tell you everything. Listen to me, Eugene, listen to me. I'm not a killer.
Oh, but is she? Alexandra, how many stars?
3.5 out of 5 for me.
All right. And how many of them were Margot Robbie?
3. This is just a fangirl meltdown, really, isn't it?
And finally, this sounds quite the jump, Ottolenghi and the Cakes of Versailles.
Look, at this time of year, I don't know whether it's just me, but there's a sort of family, especially family, sometimes with friends, there's a bit of algebra or a bit of a maneuver that we need to find films that everybody can see together. You know, you're seeing movies with people that you might not perhaps see movies with. And Ottolenghi and the Cakes of Versailles, for me, just ticks all the boxes. So on one hand, it fits, you know, if you know people who are into the cooking shows or reality TV, cooking competitions, things like that, this is 100% up their alley, no question. Now, I'm not that kind of person. They bore me to tears. My husband loves them. They are not for me whatsoever. But I adored this film. And what the director does, a woman called Laura Gabbett, is very, very clever in that she balances the structure of the cooking show or the reality TV food competition. But she balances that with an enormous amount of what we might call the bigger picture, all of the other things that come into food. So it's history and it's science and it's culture and all of these other wonderful, wonderful things that are sometimes left out, you know, when we're just, you know, slopping on the couch watching, binge watching TV cooking shows like my husband does. So what I find so interesting about this is that it's basically following a very, very famous chef called Yotam Ottolenghi, who is invited to put on an edible art show at New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art. They had an exhibition in 2018 called Visitors to Versailles. So the idea is people would turn up and they would watch the chefs. He invited a group of chefs to be inspired by Versailles and its legacy and the exhibition, and to make their own desserts around this idea of Versailles.
Because let them eat cake, right?
This is it. And that phrase is used a lot. It's almost like a running gag through this documentary that Marie Antoinette technically didn't actually say those words. And it's a bit of a gag in the film. But of course, the intent, you know, the messaging of that famous phrase, whether it's true or not, is there, and that there was a huge disconnect between the rich and the poor. And I think at the heart of that, we find what makes this such an interesting movie for people like me, who perhaps aren't really into cooking shows, in that we start looking at socioeconomic questions, looking at the history of Versailles and the enormous gap between the rich and the poor that would, of course, lead to the closure of Versailles, or, you know, the king moving away from Versailles, and the French Revolution, which all happened around the same time. What I love about this film is that it brings, you know, we're talking about jellies and pastries and chocolate and all these delicious things. And so if you're a foodie, there's lots here for you. But we're also talking about art, and we're talking about architecture. One of the pastry chefs, or one of the dessert chefs, is an ex-ballerina. We have a lot of the science of food. And of course, as I said, this bigger picture of Versailles and how it fits into history, the reign of King Louis XIV, and what that might perhaps tell us about the world that we're living in now. I mean, when I was watching this, I couldn't shake the statistic from my head that Jeff Bezos is worth $185.2 billion US. We do have this same kind of incomprehensible gap between rich and poor. So Let Them Eat Cake is both a historical reference point, but there's something about this documentary, I think, that with a very gentle, fun hand, disguised as a cooking documentary, there's an enormous amount of other things going on.
All right. I think you've sold me. Thanks, Alex.
That's great.
It's the history that gets me, but let's hear a little bit from it.
The Met and other museums are full of history of human artifacts. You see all those beautiful still lifes of food, fruit, but also pheasants and loaves of bread. There's other people reveling in the adoration of food. But the senses that are gone are the sense of smell and taste. So when you do an event that focuses on those senses, then all of a sudden it brings a whole new dimension to life. You eat something and it almost transports you back to that time.
Well, that's Ottolenghi and the Cakes of Versailles. How many stars, Alex?
4 out of 5 for me.
4 out of 5. All right. It's a big scoring week, with obviously lots of those points being taken up by Margot Robbie. Can I just say, we were talking about finding films that everyone can enjoy, and I saw 3 6-year-olds having a big fight over which Christmas movie to watch the other day, which didn't end well. But
what did they decide on?
Well, they tried Arthur Christmas. Someone had to be talked into it, and then they quickly lost interest and it was all a mess. But I managed to get my 2 6-year-old boys and my husband all watching The Sound of Music and loving it on Christmas. So I've scored. Done.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Yes, it was. one of my kids was just so, as soon as I think they'd sung, what did they sung? You know, the sound, the hills are alive with the sound of music, the bit where the father comes in and he finally hugs his kids again. And one of my boys was just clapping with this ecstatic look of glee on his face. And I thought, right, that's my boy. Done it. So there we go.
What a gift. What an extraordinary thing that a film that old can still bring so much joy. You know, we're in my job as a film critic, it's always have to see the newest film, have to see the newest film. But when we all stop and catch our breath, something like The Sound of Music, you know, maybe in Citizen Kane, these beautiful old films, maybe we don't need to be constantly rushing to watch the newest things when we can go back and watch these treasures.
Well, that's right. The joy is still there. So you don't need it to be new, as long as it's still joyful. Anyway.
And has Michael Bobby in it.
Exactly.
That's the Sound of Music I want to see.
Or maybe she can do a remake, although nothing could beat the original. Alexandra, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for your reviews. And actually, we're going to catch up with you tomorrow night, because you're joining me with CJ, and we're going to find out what your favourite movies of 2020 have been. So I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Can't wait.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.